compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hi there, Patrick Madrid at your service, reporting for duty. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show yet again. Thank you for listening. We are just a few days from Christmas, and I hope, in addition to all of your gift shopping and food preparation and all the other things that people are busy doing in anticipation of Christmas, I hope that you've had a fruitful and spiritually beneficial Advent season leading up to the birth of Jesus. And you know, even if you haven't, I was just thinking about this last night, even if maybe in the hurly-burly of getting things ready for Christmas, and I understand it can be easy to sort of slip into the mindset of all the things that Christmas really isn't about, but we all kind of think that it is, the gifts and the wrapping and the food and all the things. And I'm into that too. I like to do those things as well. Thankfully, I have a wife who does the lion's share of it for me. But in any case, I'm right there with you, and I understand what it means to be caught up in the rigors of getting ready for the holiday of Christmas. But at the same time, even if you haven't had a chance heretofore to really focus your mind and your prayers on what's about to happen, which is, of course, our celebration of the birth of Jesus, there's still time. You know, tomorrow's Christmas Eve, and then, of course, Christmas Day, when we celebrate the birth of Jesus. So there's still time. You can still make a mini retreat. You can still, you know, tuck away an extra 10 or 15 minutes today if you think to do so, and make that, if that's all of the Advent you're able to spend, then spend that. You know, don't get to Christmas morning and say, oh, gee, I wish I had done something to really prepare my heart for the Lord, and I just didn't get around to it because I was too busy. I had too many other things crowding in around me. Well, you could spend 10, 15 minutes and make a little retreat, if that's something that you'd like to do. And we're here to help you, by the way. One resource that's always available to you is the Relevant Radio app. Whether you listen to the programs or not on a local station, nonetheless, anywhere you go in the world, you can have the Relevant Radio app. And there, on the right-hand side, there is just a treasury of prayers. And some of them are recorded, so you can actually pray along with the people in the recordings. And that would be a good, easy way to do that. You have prayers, there's Christmas carols, audio prayers, basic prayers, prayers before Mass, prayers after Mass, different devotions, including Christmas devotions, prayers in Latin. If you are getting ready to go to confession, there's the confession helper to help you make your examination of conscience and do your inventory, in other words. There's a Mass location finder. So you may say, well, I've got time to get to Mass today or tomorrow. Or any other day of the week, well, we're here to help you by showing you which Masses are available at which times near you. Same with adoration. There's an adoration finder on the Relevant Radio app. So if you're thinking, well, I would like to spend 15 minutes before the Blessed Sacrament, well, you can do that. We'll show you where you can go that would be most convenient for you. The daily readings of the Mass are available there, as well as prayer requests. It's as simple as going to your Relevant Radio app and on the right side, type in, I'm looking at the screen right here, basically, you just put in your name and like where in the country you are. And you don't have to be specific if you don't want to. And you don't even have to put that in there if you don't want to. You can just say, I'm in the Midwest, or I'm in an undisclosed location, and just tell us what your prayer request is. You know, maybe this time during the holidays, as is very common for many people who have lost a loved one, could be that you're going through something very difficult right now. The loss of a husband or a wife or a child or some other type of crisis or health issue. People go through these things all the time. We're all prone to it. So don't feel like you're alone. I don't want you to feel like you're alone as we verge upon Christmas. I don't want you to feel like you're just having to grit your teeth and get through it. We're here with you. We're here to help you. And by using that Relevant Radio app, I know I don't talk about it very often, but just to mention it, you can use that Relevant Radio app as a lifeline. Or maybe put it a different way. Maybe things are going smoothly in your own life right now, and perhaps you're not mourning the passing of a loved one, but you know somebody who is. Maybe you know somebody who's alone for Christmas this year. Maybe her grandchildren can't visit her because of COVID, and they're not able to get to where she is, so she's going to be having Christmas alone. There are plenty of people around the country for whom that's a reality. and they have to deal with the holidays because there's nobody around them to look in on them or come visit them, give them a hug, give them a present, that kind of thing. And we all need those things in one way or another. So that Relevant Radio app at your fingertips could be something you could share with a little old lady down the street or somebody else that you know who may have need of that type of connection with other people, especially this time of year. So just a few thoughts about that. 888-914-9149. I'm thinking also about New Year's, not that far away. So Christmas is the day after tomorrow. New Year's is a better part of a week after that. And you know what New Year's brings typically? It brings all of those well-intentioned New Year's goals, the New Year's commitments that we make. This year, I'm going to read more books, or this year, I'm going to lose weight, or this year, I'm going to, you know, we have our list of things that we want to do. I'm sure you have your list of things, and maybe it's the same list of things every January. I've seen some of those funny pictures where, you know, on January 2nd, you see the gym and all the treadmills in the gym fully, you know, just filled with people. Everybody's on those treadmills. So, you know, January 2nd, our New Year's resolutions, everybody's going to lose weight. So they take the picture on January 2nd, all the treadmills are full. January 15th, same gym, the treadmills are empty. So yes, I too know what it's like to have New Year's resolutions that don't necessarily pan out. I've found that if this is worth anything to you, rather than have a whole bunch of New Year's resolutions or have several even, have one maybe. Just have maybe one New Year's resolution. And here's a thought. Give this a whirl. What if for 2020, your New Year's resolution was that you were going to read, I mean, pick a figure. I don't know what kind of a reader you are, but let's take something benign like reading books. Pick a figure, 10, 20, 5. You know, just pick a number and say, in the year 2020, I am going to read 10 books. And perhaps you, like most people, are no longer in the habit of reading actual books because you're consuming most of your information on the screen of your cell phone. And let's face it, we're all looking at our cell phones. It takes a real effort to put the cell phone down. You know, you sit down at the kitchen table or the dining room table to have your meal. And most of us, I find myself doing it, we'll have the cell phone right there on the table next to us, which of course for me is a temptation to look every time it dings or buzzes or chirps. I've got to look at it to see who that is that's trying to reach me. So I'm trying, as one of my resolutions that I put in place earlier this year would be to, when I sit down at the table, put the phone somewhere else where it's not there with me and I'm not tempted to look at it. That way I can focus on Nancy and focus on whoever else is at the table. But what about something like reading? The idea of reading books has really fallen by the way. Now, as an author who has spent the better part of his adult life, in my case, writing books, it's all the more frustrating for me because I'm an author at the wrong time to be an author when it comes to physical books because many people are reading less and less. So that could be a great way to feed your mind and feed your soul. And of course, you are what you eat. So the kind of books that you read will have a big impact on who you are as a person. Quick story. You may know something about the life of St. Teresa of Avila. Well, she was her family was well-to-do. Her dad did quite well. And so she was raised in, comfort. She didn't lack for any of the conveniences of the day. And as she reflected later on, she had developed a bad habit, and this is by her own estimation, she had developed a bad habit of reading romance novels. And probably in, the 1600s, it was probably nothing at all anywhere approaching the type of problems you would find in a Harlequin romance model or novel today. You know, the paperback romance novels with, the torrid love affairs and things like that. I would guess that they probably in those days were not anywhere as salacious as they are today. But in any case, in her situation, she identified that she became addicted to reading romance novels. And she also said that she got it from her mom because her mom was addicted to reading romance novels. And so that passed down to her. And from, I guess, the time she was an adolescent, she was reading romance novels. And when she had this out-of-body experience, she was already by that time a religious sister. So she had joined a convent. It was very lax in many ways. She describes in her writings how this particular convent was, you know, they had an ostensible rule of life, poverty, chastity, and obedience. Yeah, but they also ate very well. And the sisters who came from more wealthy families, they had their own private special gourmet food, and they drank wine, and they had visitors all the time. And they just were not living a very humble and ascetical lifestyle, which is what is intended for religious life, generally speaking. And so she had an experience where St. Teresa of Avila appeared to everyone else to have died. She stopped breathing. You held a mirror up to her mouth or her nose, and there was no breath. There was no sign of any activity, no heart rate, no pulse, nothing. She appeared to have been dead. And she had lapsed into this state that it was so resembling death that they were actually preparing to bury her. So she was on a bed in the family home, and they were praying for her and preparing the body to be buried. And during this time, before she woke up suddenly and scared everybody out of their wits because they thought that she was dead, and during this time, God showed her her life. She had an out-of-body experience, and she describes it as going into a tunnel, a descending tunnel that was going down, 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 and it was dark and just terrible, filled with muck and who knows. She said it was like slime and just gross stuff, and she was sliding down this tunnel toward whatever was below her, and she was given by God to realize that what she was sliding down toward was hell, and she was on her way to hell. And God was showing her not only the danger of hell, but also showing her that if she didn't change her life, that's where she would end up. So in her case, she identifies, among other things, and there were several different things, but she identifies reading those romance novels as one of the issues that she recognized that she was really falling down on. And so that was part of the change of her life. That's part of what she did to radically orient herself toward God, and the things that were frivolous or empty calories, she put those away, the romance novels being one of them. So I've always thought about that in the context of my own reading and the things that I do. I've always remembered her and remembered, my gosh, if even St. Teresa of Avila, who was already in the convent, she was already given over to religious life, and if even she was in a situation like that, thankfully God showed her before it was too late. And when she snapped out of her state and they realized that she wasn't dead, she really was a changed person. And she really got on the straight and narrow in a serious way. Well, that's given me a lot of food for thought. And so it has helped me to inform myself in terms of, like, what kind of book should I be reading? Romance novels? No, that's not going to help me. What are the things that are going to help me? What are the things that are going to help you? So again, even though we're now at the final few days, 2 days left, Christmas is right around the corner. Soon enough, Easter will be here too. It's not too late to start thinking about what do you want to do to really tighten things up, to really get rid of the things that are not helpful to you in your own life, whatever those things may be. And as we all need to do, to eat those things that are going to make you healthy, and consuming them in what you read and what you watch and what you listen to, it all has an effect. So those are my end of Advent, beginning of Christmas thoughts. I hope they're useful to you. And trust me, I try to take my own advice. It's not something that I recommend to others, but don't try to do myself. 888-914-9149. Jim, I'm glad to know you don't think I strike you as a romance novel kind of guy. That's good. I'm happy to know that. I would be nervous if I struck you that way.
I see a pattern in the books you've recommended over the years, so yeah, it just makes sense.
Have I ever recommended a romance novel?
Not believe so.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't
guess,
think I could. I don't think I know the name of one, quite frankly.
Yeah,
but
yeah. I mean, I guess the Bible in itself is a good love story, but I wouldn't quite put it in the category of romance novel.
There you go. Sarah just asked me if the book, The Dogma of Hell, if that's a romance novel. No, it's not a romance novel, but as St. Teresa of Avila might say, that if she had continued reading the romance novels, maybe that's where she might have wound up. Word to the wise, right? Why don't we take a break? We're at the point where we need to do so anyway. So we'll come right back to your phone calls. I've got a lot of stuff I want to share with you. And my phone line is open, so call now. We'll get you on the air. No busy signal if you call me soon, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principalsclasses.com/Madrid.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
All right, we are back, cruising toward our Christmas holiday together. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Let's go to Mark in Philadelphia. Good morning, Mark.
I just had a quick question, Patrick. Sure. Number one, love your show. I had an opportunity to sit with a Carmelite, one who I have a lot of respect for, and she told me that, you know, after you die, you sort of get like one last shot at, I guess, you know, amending your life or saying, you know, which way you want to go kind of thing. Yeah. Is that true?
Well, I think it is true for some people. I mean, you may have heard me talking about St. Teresa of Avila a few moments ago.
Sure.
And she seems to have gotten that. She had this near-death experience. She appeared to have died. She was given I don't know if I'd call it a vision. I don't know what she saw exactly, but God let her see that she was destined to go to hell given her current state of her soul. And then she was allowed to come back, and then she changed her life and became a great saint. So there's an example of what you're talking about. But does it happen to every single person? I don't know. I don't think so. And one of the anecdotal sources that makes me not think so would be how death catches people suddenly in many cases. It could be a heart attack. You fall down, hit your head. It could be anything. And in that book, The Dogma of Hell, there are just many, many stories of the souls of the damned who God permitted to come back to warn others who died suddenly, and they never talk about any second chance. So as much as I'd like think that would be the case, I would not want to bank on it personally. I would not want to assume, oh, well, you know, I'll live my life the way I want to because I'm always going to have that second chance. I'm not so sure that everybody gets that. I'm not so sure that most people get that.
Yeah, I love this woman, but I'm, like you say, I'm not banking on that either. So
I don't get the connection. You love which woman?
The Carmelite that, you know, that told me that. So
I see. Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, it may be her belief. It could be her hope. And sometimes we express our hopes in ways that other people might say, oh, well, that must be true. It could be true. Might be true. I hope it's true. But there's nothing in divine revelation that tells us that you get a second chance at the moment of death. That's the part that I would say. That for me, that's sufficient to say, okay, I'm going to err on the side of caution.
Sure.
So I'll hope it's there, but I'll assume it won't be, so that I can be prepared either way.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, I had one other question, if I could ask it.
Sure.
Would you mind, I read your book, Why Be Catholic, and one of the things that struck me was about the Immaculate Conception. I always thought it was, the actual conception. And you had said in there, that's how we've, of the Blessed Virgin.
Okay.
And I was, you had sort of referred to it as or I thought you referred to it as, the way we sort of think of the Virgin's life. Could you explain that a little more?
Well, I'm not sure if I quite follow what you're asking me. So are you asking me to explain what the Immaculate Conception is? Is that what you mean?
I know what it is, but I thought that in your book you said it was more than just the Virgin being born without original sin.
Okay, got it. So let's posit a couple things. First of all, the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary does not refer to the way in which she was conceived in the manner that she conceived Jesus. So we have to, for the benefit of those who may not understand that part, so the virgin birth and the virginal conception of Jesus was unique to Jesus. So part the Immaculate Conception does not include that. So right. What does it mean? So it means that from the moment of her conception, God prevented Mary from falling into any sin. So she was not, she did not contract the stain of original sin. And the original sin could be understood, I think, more clearly as a state that you're born in, you're conceived in. You're conceived in a state that is fallen, meaning that you're missing many different things that you should have had Adam and Eve not sinned, and that many of which Adam and Eve did have before they sinned. So those preternatural gifts are not there. So you're born missing some things that you really should have. Now, it doesn't mean that you yourself are born in sin in the sense that God looks at you as a sinner who has committed a sin, but rather that you and I are the descendants of Adam and Eve, and because of Adam's sin, that sinful status now transfers to us. And so when we're conceived, we are born deprived of that right relationship with God, or being justified with God. So in the case of the Blessed Virgin Mary, that was never a reality for her. She was preserved from that from the moment of her conception. And furthermore, she was also preserved by God from falling into sin at any point along the way in her life. So her will was perfectly oriented to the Lord's will. She sought to do God's will throughout her whole life, even if at any given moment she may not have fully understood what God's will was for her. Take a look at the Annunciation, as we discussed yesterday, the angel's greeting to her was startling and perplexing, and she didn't quite understand how can this be. So God's will for her gradually unfolded, but his preservation of her purity, his preservation of her sinlessness was continuous. And it was his gift to her. It wasn't something that she did. She didn't merit it. It was something that God did for her. And one last thing I'll mention, Mark, is that it wasn't necessary that, strictly speaking, that Mary be immaculate. It was rather fitting and appropriate that she be immaculate, but it wasn't necessary because her parents were not immaculately conceived. So sometimes people will say, well, Mary must have been immaculately conceived because had she not been, she could not have passed down an immaculate human nature to Jesus. Well, that's not true. She easily could have passed down an immaculate human nature to Jesus, even if she herself had not been immaculate, because her own parents were not immaculately conceived, and yet they passed down a human nature to Mary that was free from the taint of original sin. And that's God's doing, not man's doing. So this is all God in his grace from beginning to end. And we recognize it when we extol this special gift that God gave to Mary. Now, there's so much one could say about the Immaculate Conception. I don't know if I got to the point that you want, or if there's more to it that you wanted to ask about.
Not having what we were supposed to have and Mary having it,
yeah,
really just opened my eyes as to the Immaculate Conception. Thank you.
You're most welcome. I appreciate that. Thank you for the call, and always enjoy talking about the Blessed Virgin Mary. Let's go now to Kip in Easton, Pennsylvania. Hello, Kip. Welcome.
Hey, Patrick. Merry Christmas to you and Nancy and the family.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
I wanted to ask you. Thanks so much. I want to ask you, because there are no coincidences in the Bible, Barabbas, when translated, I believe, means son of the father. And it's just interesting that he would have a name, son of the father, and he would be put in front of people to choose between the son of the father and a man named son of the father. And I was wondering, what can you tell us about that seeming coincidence? What do the early church fathers, is there any meaning behind this or anything we should know behind this?
That's a great question. And I must say, I don't know the answer to that off the cuff. I'd have to do a little bit of sleuthing myself. St. Thomas Aquinas, for example, in the Catena Aurea, which is Latin for the golden chain, he has compiled a commentary from the church fathers on every verse of the four gospels. So as we look at the gospel passages where Barabbas appears in Matthew 27, for example, and the other passages, I would need to sit down and see, what did St. Augustine say about that? Was there any significance of this name, son of the father, Barabbas, that we should take into account? I've never run across any comment on that, but that doesn't mean anything, because the fathers commented on it, many things that I may have missed along the way. So that's what I would need to do. But I think that's a very fascinating question, and I would be happy to do that and then report back to you what I find.
Well, I've been practicing. It's not easy to stump you.
Oh, it's easier than you might think. Just ask Nancy. She'll tell you. But yeah, that's
wonderful, Patrick.
Yeah, it's one. You know where? You know, I'm thinking right now, if you were to go to the Catholic Answers website, Catholic.com, they have the entire Catholic Encyclopedia online. So if you went to B for Barabbas in the encyclopedia, I wouldn't be surprised that if there is anything patristic about that name or some really interesting insight about that name, you'd probably find it in that article. And that's one of the places I would go as well to check it out.
Very good. I'll check it out.
Okay, great. Well, are you going to have family with you at your place, or are you going to be traveling to visit for Christmas?
No, some will be home, but I have daughters spread out all over the world, so we'll have to FaceTime with them.
Well, I hope it's a very happy and blessed Christmas for all of you.
Thanks much.
Yeah, thank you, Kip. Good to talk to you. Let's see. How about Teresa in Dallas? Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're
love the show.
Thank you.
I have a quick question about, I have a niece who is, I'm guessing, transgender. Okay. She prefers a different name. And she is just hell-bent on me calling her by that name. And I just really cannot follow the movement. I don't understand it, and I really don't like it so much. Mm-hmm. Could you help me out here?
I'll try. One thing I would recommend is that you read either or both of the two books I'm going to mention. If you have a pen handy, jot these down. First one is called Irreversible Damage, How the Transgender Craze, okay. You don't have to write the subtitle. It's just called Irreversible Damage. But the subtitle is How the Transgender Craze is Destroying Our Daughters. And that's by Abigail Schreier, S-H-R-I-E-R. Second book I'd recommend came out earlier. It's called When Harry Became Sally by Dr. Ryan Anderson. Remember the movie? I never saw the movie, but I know of it. And that's When Harry Met Sally? Okay.
Yes.
So it's a riff on that title, When Harry Became Sally. Ryan Anderson is the author, and that's another excellent contribution to this question. You know, what's going on here? Why is this happening all of a sudden? You know, when I was in high school, to give you one example, and I don't know how old you are, Teresa, but I graduated from high school in 1978, and I can't remember ever even hearing about somebody who is transgender. It may have existed. I'm sure it probably did, but nobody ever talked about it or knew about it. So it wasn't even on anyone's radar screen. Even the word transgender didn't really exist that I remember. So it's all of a sudden, you know, where is this coming from? And why is it now really just becoming such a driving force in our society? What are the root causes of that? Well, these two books get into that question. And they also give you some practical advice on how you can talk to people and deal with them in a way that's loving and compassionate, but also speaking the truth in love. And that gets me to the, I guess, the essence of your question. What do you do when she wants you to call her by her transgender name? So let's say that she, you know, her name is, I don't know. Let's say her name is Mary, just to choose a very simple common name. And now she wants to be called Charles or, you know, who knows what. There are a couple ways you can handle it. One would be to say, I'm sorry, that's not your name, and I feel uncomfortable calling you by something that's not your name. It just makes me uncomfortable. So please respect that. You could say that to her. You know, please respect, you know, my diversity. You know, I believe in tolerance, and I'm just asking you to please be tolerant. You know, don't be intolerant here. Be tolerant and accept my diversity. And, you know, it might be more difficult for her to argue against that because that's what she's going to demand for herself, tolerance and diversity. But you can ask for the same thing for yourself and just say, that makes me uncomfortable. It triggers me, you know. Please don't trigger me by asking me to do that. These are all ways that you can use the language and the thought categories of, you know, the modern mindset in a way that can work to your benefit. Okay, that's one way to do it. Another way to do it would be to just be very upfront and to say, absolutely not. I'm not going to call you by that name because that further plays into this delusion that you're suffering from. Now, I don't know how forthright you want to be because I don't know what your relationship is with her, but there are times and places when that would be a very apt thing to do, to say, no, I'm not going to do that because you're asserting something that isn't really true. And I don't want to enable something that's not true. I don't want to enable a delusion. And you'll have to make the judgment call whether or not something that forthright is going to be helpful or not. Now, the third way you can approach it, and there may be others, but the third one that occurs to me would be to say, sure, okay, I'll call you Charles if that's what you really want me to call you, but you know that that's not your real name. And if I call you Charles, please don't think that it means that I accept the fact that you think that you're a man now, because I don't. You're a woman. You'll always be a woman, you know, and my heart goes out to you if you're going through confusion or difficulty or pain or ostracization or whatever the other issues may be. I'm right there for you, and I'll love you. I'll never stop loving you, and I will always be happy to support you and to be here for you, but I'm not going to lie to you. And so, okay, if you want me to call you Charles, sure, I'll call you Charles. But be aware that that doesn't mean that I agree with this new lifestyle that you've chosen. You could take that approach too. And, you know, any one of these three could instantly end your relationship with her if that's what she chooses. Or any one of these three could actually be a catalyst for maybe some change or some dialogue or for her to be willing to reconsider some things. Then the last thing I'd suggest, Teresa, would be to give her the link to a website called sexchangeregret.com. Walter Hoyer is the name of the man who lived as a transgender woman, quote unquote, for many years. And he realized just how deeply, deeply he regretted this, including the surgeries that he underwent to try to conform his body to his mind's eye image of himself. And it's too late now to do anything about that, but he's trying very hard to help other people from winding up in the same situation that he was in, where he deeply regretted this. And he's got lots of resources on that website, sexchangeregret.com, videos, articles, book recommendations, his own testimony and that of other people. So these are all tools that you could use, not only for your own knowledge, but you could use them to maybe share with her if she'd be willing to look at some of them. Okay.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, I've tried several approaches, and she's not talking to me because I have been honest and say I'm not comfortable.
Yeah.
And I call her by her given name, and that's not fine. What she wants. The whole family supports her. And
so what I would do, I've got to take a break. What I would do is to say, gee, I thought you were all about diversity and tolerance. You know, what a disappointment. I believe in diversity and tolerance, and I wish you did too. Why are you so intolerant? Why do you not accept my diversity? Use those tools in your favor. It becomes very difficult for them to argue against them because that's their mantra. And when you start using it, all of a sudden they realize that it's a stacked deck. It's a double standard. That may help. Thank you. I'll be right back.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America.
You can find more information and your local Catholic credit union at relevantradio.com/banking.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Christmas is the time of year.
Little Ray Charles for your morning. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. My number is 888-914-9149. Call now. We've got some lines open. This would be the great, maybe not the great, but a great time to call because you won't get a busy signal. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Jerry in Maine. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well. Thank you.
Good. Good. I'm calling about what you were talking about with the Immaculate Conception.
Right.
You said that God didn't need to make Mary perfect and have an Immaculate Conception because her parents were not perfect.
Not because of that, no. I was saying that that is evidence of why it did not have to happen. Rather, what I said is that it was not necessary that God make Mary immaculate. It was fitting, it was proper, but it wasn't necessary.
Well, I disagree with you. It is necessary because God is holy. In order for God to come through Mary, she had to be holy. If she was not holy at any time during her life before the conception, she could have committed sin if she had chosen. She chose not to.
Yeah, well, you're wrong, and that's not what the church teaches. The church explicitly says that it was not necessary for Mary to be immaculately conceived, and by way of evidence, her parents did not need to be immaculately conceived for them to bring forth an immaculate daughter. So she, Mary, was holy, and she was free from all sin, as Jesus is, and her parents were not. So there's sufficient proof in itself, Jerry, that it's not necessary for the parents to be holy in order for the child to be holy.
I'm not talking about her parents. I'm talking about her. Because if you look at Moses, what did God say to Moses when he walked over to the bush?
I'm not here to answer questions. You know, I'm just telling you that I understand you have this perspective, but that's not what the church teaches. The church does not teach that Mary had to be immaculately conceived. Rather, that it was fitting and appropriate that God do so, but he didn't have to do so.
Well, we're going to have a disagreement on it because in order for God is holy, and that's why we have priests. They are given the consecration from the Holy Spirit to have.
That's superfluous, Jerry. You're right. Jesus is holy. Jesus being God, the second person of the Trinity, he's holy. And he was born from an immaculate mother. Mary herself is holy, free from all sin. She was not born from immaculate parents. So if you
That's true. But what I'm saying is Mary needed to be holy. You're saying that because her parents were not immaculately conceived, that means that she does not have to be conceived without sin. And I'm saying that's not true.
Well, you can say it all you want, Jerry, but what you're saying is not true. I realize that you harbor this very, you know, intense belief on this, but it's not what the church teaches.
It's not a belief. That's the truth.
No, it's not the truth. The truth is that Jesus was free from all sin because he's God. Mary, not being God, is a creature, but she was preserved free from all sin by God. And just as Jesus received his immaculate nature, human nature from Mary, she did not receive her immaculate human nature from her parents. So the fact that her parents were not immaculately conceived demonstrates that it is not necessary for somebody who is free from all sin to be born from somebody who is free from all sin.
But you're saying that the conception, but you're missing the point that God allowed that.
I'm not missing any point, Jerry. You're missing the point. All I'm saying to you is that what you're espousing here is not what the church teaches. That's all.
Well, what I'm saying is that I don't agree that that's what the church is teaching, because the church is teaching that God creates, and God created this, and God created the situation at hand from the beginning of time. No different than when he said to the evil one,
Jerry, you're wrong. You're simply wrong.
Well, I'm going to agree with you in 99% of what you said, but that 1% is not correct. God chose to make something perfect for a reason. There was a reason for that.
God's hands were not tied, Jerry. God did not have to do it. God was not obligated. It wasn't though he said, well, I guess I'm going to have to make her immaculate because there's no way to have an immaculate son born of Mary unless she's immaculate, so here goes. That's not what happened.
Well, it's not any different than sin. If you are in mortal sin, you cannot receive from God because God doesn't want you. He does not want to go someplace where somebody is not in the right state.
Right, but here's what you're missing. To be in the state of mortal sin is one thing, but to be in the state of grace and yet still a sinner, that's another thing. So the parents of St. John the Baptist, Elizabeth and Zechariah, you can read about them in Luke chapter 1. They were born in original sin, and yet it says there that they were observing the commandments and the ordinances of the Lord blamelessly. So they were leading exemplary lives. We could say that they were in the state of grace, if we want to use those terms, but they were still not immaculately conceived. So, I mean, just in other words, if your argument is that either Mary had to be immaculately conceived or she was in the state of mortal sin, that's a false dichotomy. That was never the two options.
Is she not the new Eve?
Yes, she is.
Okay, so was Eve born with sin?
Was Eve born with sin? Eve was created.
Eve.
You know the answer to this question, Jerry.
But if she's going to be the new Eve, then she has to be. If she's going to be the new Eve, then she has to be sinless.
Well, Eve was created sinless. That's true, but Eve was not created in the state of perfection of grace as Mary was. So Eve had an original innocence before the fall, but she did not have the grace that Mary has from the moment of her conception. This is a good analogy between Eve and Mary, but it doesn't help your case in the question of the incarnation.
Well, it is, because she in order to be the new Eve, she had to be in the same state as our mother, had to be the same state as Eve.
False.
And then it's our mother's choice. Our mother could have chosen to sin.
No.
You mean she couldn't have chosen to sin?
No. Mary's will was perfectly united with that of God's from the moment of her conception.
That's correct.
Yeah, so she would not choose to sin any more than the good angels in heaven would choose to sin, or the blessed in heaven would choose to sin. For them, it's effectively an impossibility. They have sanctifying grace, and they have free will, but they're not in a position where they would choose to go against God's will for their lives. Jim, I'm having trouble with the board. Can you bring Jerry's volume up? Because for some reason it went down on me. There we go. There you go, Jerry. Okay.
So what you said, if the angels were doing that, they had made a choice. Lucifer made a choice to go against God. Any one of them angels, one third of them did choose to go against God.
No, we don't know the number, but okay, what's your point about that?
The point is, you said the angels were entitled to God to do God's will and would not commit sin. That would be wrong because Lucifer committed a sin to go.
No, Jerry. Okay, Jerry, go back and read your Baltimore Catechism. You missed a few pages along the way. The angels, when they were created by God, they did not have sanctifying grace. They were not in the beatific vision. That's why they could make a decision in the case of the fallen angels against God. Once they made that decision, the angels became fallen angels, and then the good angels at that point immediately went into the beatific vision, where their decision for God was permanent. So at this point, they could never fall away. They could never turn against God. They still had free will. Just like you have free will, but I'm guessing you probably wouldn't burn your house down with your family in it. I mean, you're free to do that. You could do that, but you would never do that.
I think we both agree on that, and it's a matter of different terminology. But yeah, I agree with you. And our mother, she never had that desire, but she had the free will.
Yeah.
So she could have done something different. It's not like if she chose anywhere along the line to do something of a different nature, she could have chosen that. But because God had given her all these graces and privileges, she was able to stay within God's will at all times.
That's the whole point.
And she had that connection to God.
That's the whole point. So in other words, Mary's free will does not mean that Mary could have reached a point in her life where she said, you know what, I'm tired of this stuff, I'm going to go do something bad. Mary was preserved by God from doing that with her free will still intact. But this still doesn't help you with regard to your argument about God needing to or being obligated to make Mary immaculate in order for the incarnation to take place. That still doesn't help you there.
It was God's choice. Absolutely is God's choice. And God chooses to do as he pleases. And he can.
Right. But, Jerry, your position entails that God had no choice. In other words, God had to do it. It was necessary that he do it. So now you're saying he had a choice. And I agree with you in that regard, because he did have a choice. God's sovereign. But the essence of your argument is that God really didn't have a choice because it was necessary that Mary be immaculate. And all I'm saying is that's not what the church teaches.
What I'm saying is that if she was not holy, then she would not have been able to conceive the Son of God.
That's not true, because her parents were not. When you say holy, I think you mean immaculate. Her parents were not immaculate, and they conceived her, and she was holy. That right there disproves your claim.
No, because God can do as he chooses. God chose to bring me.
Hey, Jerry, no need to yell. We're friends.
Well, I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to yell. It's probably the reception of my phone, so I apologize about that. But if Mary, if God chose to do it differently, that's what the Protestants say. Protestants say that God just chose Mary and used her to have the baby, Jesus, and then he deserted her. But that would be false.
Yeah, of course it would. It has nothing to do with my position or the church's teaching on this issue. That's a red herring.
Yeah, but if Mary had not, if Eve was pure and holy when God created Eve,
then
Eve chose to sin.
She wasn't.
But she chose to sin.
But Jerry, there's a difference here. Eve had, she was in the state of original innocence. She did not have the sanctifying grace that she would have had she passed the test. She and Adam fell. So they were like the angels before their decision, before their fall. So the angels did not have what they had after the fall. The good angels were not confirmed in grace before the fall the way they were after the fall. The same is true for Adam and Eve. They had an original innocence, and they had a right relationship with God insofar as it went, but it wasn't at the level of what Mary received from the moment of her conception.
Right. And I agree.
Okay.
But I also, that was God's plan from day one, and that was his plan, okay?
That's true.
And to say that what God had chosen to do has nothing to do with Mary's mother and father.
No.
It deals with the fact.
Yeah, in other words, all I'm saying is that your view entails that God had to do this, and that's not what the church teaches. It was fitting and appropriate that God do it.
Okay. I think maybe it could be a difference of words, but thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate your patience.
All right.
This is an important topic. Thank you very much. Thank you. We're going to come back with hour two in just a moment. Please stay right there. If you want to get in on the action, call me at 888-914-9149.